Vamos a orar. Let's join together in prayer. Gracious God, thank you for this day, for this place, for this community of people, for the presence of your Spirit. And thank you for these words from your scriptures, as challenging as they are. We thank you for the chance to consider them, to question them, and to consider our lives and our world. So now, may we experience your presence guiding us, opening us, teaching us, leading us more fully into your grace, your truth, and into your presence. May the words of my mouth and the thoughts and dreams and meditations of our hearts be delightful in your sight. For Lord, you are our delight. Amen. It's just down the road. It's not very far away. These are famous last words in a country like Nicaragua. When we were approached by one of the children of the school to head just a little ways down the dirt road away from the school to get to taste and experience one of the great gifts of the land, a small sacred fruit that grows in the wild. And so Juan Antonio, about a 10-year-old boy, came to our team leader and interpreter, Leo, and asked if we wanted to sample some of these fruits. And so Bob Kruger and Trevor and myself decided to follow along and go on an adventure to God knows where. And as we began walking down the dirt road, and I kept kind of looking behind me and seeing the school fading off in the distance, I kept wondering how much further, and we would even ask, are we there yet? And Juan Antonio, not very far, just down the road. And we just keep walking and walking and walking. And eventually we hit a turn in the road and the school disappears behind us. And thinking, okay, now this is really getting fun. Because we literally do not know where we are. But it's just around this bend that then Juan Antonio leads us off the road and down a long driveway. And we come to the end of that driveway, and there's a small house, and a young man comes out. And Juan Antonio has a little conversation with him, and then he calls out someone else, and it's Santiago, another boy from the school. And Santiago then goes in the house and calls out someone else, and it's his grandfather. And they all come out to greet us, and they greet us warmly with handshakes and with smiles, and we introduce ourselves. And then Santiago and Juan Antonio go darting over towards this spindly kind of tree that has these small, oval-shaped, green, hard fruits on them. And Juan Antonio just immediately climbs up into the tree, and Santiago grabs a large stick and begins poking at the tree. The young man in the group goes back to the house and comes back with something, and it's a plastic old grocery bag. And meanwhile, the grandfather's just there smiling. And then he's saying things in Spanish that we don't understand, and he's talking with Leo. But we're complete strangers. We're gringos. We don't speak the language. We don't look like them. They wouldn't know us from anyone on this planet. And here they are, stopping what they were doing, which looked to be having some sort of lunch, and set their things aside and came out, and the boys began picking down and tossing down countless numbers of this fruit, probably 4 dozen of these small green fruits. And meanwhile, Grandpa is chatting us up in a way that we can't understand, and yet he's so filled with joy, and he's laughing, and Leo's laughing and trying to translate for us to give us a sense of what the grandfather's sharing, and the boys are up there having fun in the tree. And it's remarkable. It's remarkable because I'm trying to translate this to my own culture and thinking, if someone, three people who did not know my language, suddenly appeared at my doorstep and I was having lunch with my family, what would be my natural response? Well, to be honest, it would be, how quickly can I get them away from my doorway? You're interrupting my lunch. This is time with my family. This doesn't come along very often. Or I would be thinking, what am I supposed to do here? Am I supposed to welcome these people in? Am I supposed to give them something to eat? I'm not quite sure what to do, but it would be discomfort more than comfort in that situation. And yet, in this small little village in Nicaragua, it was the exact opposite. It was almost like they were expecting us. And like we weren't an interruption or an aberration in their day, but rather this is just a part of life. And this tree that's growing wildly in their yard isn't theirs. It isn't their possession, but rather they recognize that it's a gift and that it's producing gifts to be shared, to be enjoyed. And so we left from that place with this big bag full of fruit, and we take it back to the rest of our group and to the school. And then we pull them out, and Leo says, go ahead, take a bite. Take a hard bite, because they're not really soft. And so some of us do, and we take a bite. And all of our senses are reeling and saying, danger, danger, danger. We did wash them off before we bit them, just so you know. It was some of the most bitter sensation that my tongue and my lips have ever experienced. And I'm thinking, this is a sacred fruit. But then I chew, and I keep chewing. And I chew a little while longer, and I keep chewing. Like I said, this is kind of tough stuff here. And yet the longer I chew, the more a different kind of sensation enters my mouth. And it's not as bitter. And there's even a little bit of tanginess starting to work its way through. And even a slight little bit of sweetness. And Mike O'Connor, one of our team members, comes over and he's like, ah, the sacred fruit, what did you think? He had already tried one. And I said, well, it's different. And he said, yeah, it's kind of like a not yet ripe Granny Smith apple. And I said, yeah, it is kind of like that. It's something that really jars you at first, kind of knocks you off your feet. But then, once you continue chewing it, the other flavors come through and you recognize there is something satisfying about this. Found out later that the large seed that's inside of it is something that's used for a drink called a horchata. And some of you may have had horchata. If you've traveled in Central America, or if you've gone to a taqueria here in Portland. And it was fascinating just to find out that there were multiple uses to this small little fruit that the Mayans said grew out of the seeds of revolution. You can take that a number of different ways, but ultimately the thing that really struck me was that it's not a seed that anyone plants to grow something and nurture it. It just happens. It's like huckleberries in Montana. You can't really cultivate them. They just pop up where they will, and they provide you with something that is surprising and yet delightful and amazing. Jesus gives us some words this morning that jar us, that sort of knock us off our feet when we hear them. Jesus has a habit of doing this. He certainly knocked his earliest followers off of their feet. One of them got back up onto his feet and tried to correct him, saying, Jesus, you must have gotten this wrong. Clearly, when you were, you know, being trained in rabbi school, you missed this lesson. The Messiah isn't supposed to die. The Messiah is the symbol of life and vitality and power. And Jesus looks at him and says, "No, I think you got the lesson wrong. You're not quite catching my message here. My message is the Messiah came not to meet your expectations, but to confound them. Not to fall in line with a plan that you've been anticipating for centuries, but in some ways to thwart those plans, to turn them upside down, inside out. The way to life is death. The way to abundance is through a road of scarcity. The way of experiencing a life worth grabbing a hold of and living for all it's worth comes by letting go." And maybe some of the letting go includes those expectations and anticipations and understandings of what life is meant to be. You want to find your life? Lose it. You want to save yourself? Surrender. You want to find the sweetness? Bite into the bitterness. Our team that just returned from Nicaragua experienced this in spades, with expectations one after the other flying out of the window. We came to Nicaragua to repair two wells. I believe two of us, of the 13 of us, were involved in some hands-on form of repairing one of the wells. The other well was repaired entirely by local Nicaraguans. We resourced that work to happen. We gave of our treasures so that those wells could be restored and repaired, and so that fresh water once again could come to those villages. But we arrived at a school that was desperately in need, not only of paint, but they also had a makeshift outdoor kitchen shelter under which teachers made a hot meal for their students every single day. And that shelter had collapsed. That shelter was so old that the rusted, corrugated metal that served as kind of a makeshift roof had a cactus growing on top of it. The wood was rotting from termites and from the rainy seasons and the wear and tear. And the teacher pointed over there, and instantly for us, the potential third well to be repaired became building a new kitchen. It just so happened that one of our team members, Mike O'Connor's friend Carl, was a carpenter. And so instantly in that moment, Carpenter Carl became one of our leaders. And four or five of us snapped into action and resourced and envisioned a new structure. And within a couple of days, that structure, now in a concrete foundation for those posts, new scaffolding, new corrugated tin roof, was put into place. And as Trevor mentioned to the kids earlier, this village of parents showed up on the first day as we looked at a school that was three times the size of the school we painted last year, and also a school that needed painting on the inside as well as the outside. And yet without hesitation, these parents embraced us and welcomed us and said, "We're here with you." And so again, expectations were altered, were shifted, and it became a painting party. And while us gringos were breathing in those fumes from oil-based paint, the parents were laughing and singing songs. Some of what they were laughing at was our broken attempts at Spanish. But the paint was being spilled left and right, and blue was being mixed with white, and white with blue. And it didn't matter. Because the joy of serving together was the most important aspect of this whole experience. The Nicaraguan parents with each other, our team with each other, and then our two teams together. We were able to create something that neither one of our teams could have done on their own. And it wasn't just at the school. It was also in the village of El Tránsito proper where we stayed. And we stayed at a place called Olas Clandestinas, Clandestine Beach, which was a beautiful hostel, and actually two hostels, one brand new, one more established, and a restaurant owned and run by a delightful man named Jonio. And Jonio was a successful businessman who had a heart for this village, does have a heart for this village. And Jonio owned all of this property and had a stake in a couple other properties as well. And in conversation with him, you would think, okay, property owner, real estate, this guy's looking at the next conquest. What's the next place along the coast that I can purchase and add to my real estate empire? And again, expectations confounded. Because what he shared with us was a vision of cooperative thriving. Business leaders actually coming together and helping each other out. And reaching out to people who are unemployed in the village and giving them training and a chance not only at a decent paying job, but at a sense of purpose and vitality and vocation in their lives. And thinking about how these properties can't just be used for profit, but profit of a different kind. A profit of increased character and of increased abundance in this village that is poverty stricken, that is drought stricken. An understanding of partnership, of being neighbors with each other, and the bottom line being human flourishing. Not just an increased number on the bottom of a balance sheet. Expectations confounded over and over again. And invitations from all of these complete strangers to enter into their world, into their community, into their lives, in some cases into their homes. And I read this passage and hear these words of Jesus. What does it profit someone to gain the world if they lose their heart and soul? And I wonder if I just spent a week living with people who didn't necessarily talk about these words of Jesus, but maybe didn't have to, because they were living them. Because their understanding of life was not based in fear or protection, or trying to make sure that I have my own and hoping that you get yours too. But thinking more along the lines of, my own is your own. My flourishing is your flourishing, and vice versa. Life not being a possession to be hoarded, but a gift to be shared. And I think of the life of Jesus, the one who lived with an open mind and an open heart, who loved the loveless, who touched the untouchables, whose hands and feet and whole being emanated openness. And who lived a life that ultimately was exemplified by laying it down well before he got to the cross. And yet we see his body on that cross, those arms outstretched, saying, I love you this much, embracing us right where we are, just as we are, and saying, all that I am and all that I have is yours. And I think about how fearful I am so often when I think about that kind of radical openness, that kind of extreme compassion, that kind of almost unthinkable and unbelievable love. And I think about that tiny fruit. And I wonder what that fruit might be for me now that I had to leave those fruits behind. What is that bitter fruit that I'm called to sink my teeth into, to discover the underlying tanginess and even sweetness? What is that part of my life that I'm clutching onto for dear life in fear of losing it? And how might I be called and empowered by that grace, by that love, by that hope, by that spirit to let it go? Like the quote on the cover of your bulletin says, that great forebearer of our tradition, Meister Eckhart, God does not ask anything else of you except that you let yourself go and let God be God in you. What would it be to let go of our fears in faith? What might it look like to view our lives less as a possession to be hoarded and more as a gift to be shared? What might happen? What might emerge out of that uncertainty? What possibilities might present themselves? When we're invited to the communion table, we are invited once again to consider the one who showed us the full extent of love by letting go of life, including all of those fears and expectations and anxieties and worries and problems and issues, and letting them be, and letting that love flow from him to all of us. The invitation, even in a small way as letting go of one fear, is to come to this table, recognizing in a tangible way that the only way we can receive what is there for us to receive in life is with open hands, with open arms, with open minds, with open hearts, with open spirits. The invitation to this celebration of communion is always an invitation to let go and to let God be God in us. So come to this table knowing that you are loved, and knowing that you are love. Come to this table and taste and see that even when that first bite is bitter, what's waiting for you underneath that is sweet. Amen.